Okay. Hey there, everybody. It's Carolyn Elliott.
And I'm Layla Bernard.
And you are listening to the Sleep Over podcast.
Here we are.
We're in our car after going to the gym, or my car.
We're in Carolyn's car after doing our morning fitness gym routine. And I said to Carolyn this morning, like, because we do a lot of chatting and gossiping and just general hanging out while at the gym. And I was saying to Carolyn that I feel like we may not be working out very intensely, but we may actually manage to work out at this intensity for a good long while, which...
For our whole lives.
Yes. Which I feel like is an important thing to remember in any kind of discipline that you're taking on, that, like, do it so that you might want to keep doing it and not overwhelm yourself. I hear this... I'm actually saying this to people directly about magical practice, because I hear this a lot from people who, like... get into magic and then are like, oh, so I need to do like a bajillion things every day. And then they're like, I can't do that. So then they like completely stop doing any of it and just do it so that you can keep doing it. That's enough. Mm-hmm. That's going to be better in the long run.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So this morning I was telling Layla, I have been listening to this audio series called Cosmic Consciousness. It's on Audible. It's from Sounds True. It's basically like the lady who runs Sounds True is interviewing Ken Wilber about his integral theory. And I'm really enjoying it because I've been wanting to learn more about integral theory for a while. But like, man, those are some thick tomes that Ken Wilber wrote. And, you know, I'm very lazy these days.
And you're not in grad school anymore.
Not in grad school anymore. So it was very nice with the Sounds True lady to just get Ken Wilber to like sit down and conversationally explain things about his theory. And, you know, it's a whole lot to absorb. So I'm
Is integral theory, Carolyn? Could you just like, we've been chatting about it, but like what?
Well, great question. I mean, I think it's a way, it's sort of like a way to synthesize or summarize a whole lot of developmental models, like moral development, consciousness development, and cognitive development.
Emotional,
spiritual, everything. Hmm. And it's like synthesized into this like grand overview. Mm. And there's a number of different of components to it. There's like this quadrants thing. there's this lines and levels of like specific kinds of intelligence. If I'm remembering correctly, I think the quadrants have to do with like relational positions, like first person, second person, third person, and you know, like the moral levels of understanding that like go along with that, like, and then there's stages of consciousness, so like I guess like, you know, pre-rational or like a sort of like a childhood state of consciousness, and then like rational adult consciousness, and then, you know, trans or, you know, beyond that, like transrational, transpersonal sort of consciousness experiences. And that can also correspond to, as I was just analogizing, like phases of human, you know, developmental growth. And, yeah, there's other stuff. I mean, it's complex. I don't fully understand how it all works and fits together, but I'm glad that Ken Wilber understands it.
Yeah, and like what has been like the things that you enjoyed most, like mentating upon listening to it?
Yeah, so the thing that I was enjoying thinking about was there was a section where Wilber was talking about stages of consciousness, and there's like five initial stages, and there's a whole bunch of different terms, like, since he's doing this vast synthesis, there's a whole bunch of different terms by which you could call these stages, but he was talking about them in terms of archaic, magical, mythic, mythic rational, and rational as being the first five stages of consciousness. And all of those correspond both to historical sort of ages in human development, and to, like, you know, a single human growing up through these different levels.
I forget what that's called. This is reminding me a little bit of, like, when I'm looking at those words, I'm like, oh, this is reminding me of the, like, Waldorf, Rudolf Steiner idea about, like, what children should be, like, putting their attention on at different, like, ages and stages. And, like, they do a lot of teaching through myth and, you know, embracing the like magical thinking of young children, and then take kids from like the world of fairy tales into the worlds of like the mythic, you know, Greek and Norse gods, and then into like the kind of like at the end of the sort of grade school, you know, junior high level is the like mythic rational kind of entering into like, you know, the Greek philosophers maybe like philosophizing about the meanings of the mythic doings of the gods. Like anyway.
Yeah. And so it's interesting because like magical in this sense is not like how we usually talk about it. It's not like high magic. It's like magical in the sense of like a child feeling like, you know, if they wish hard enough for Mickey Mouse to appear, that Mickey Mouse will appear. Or like, it's sort of like an egocentric, simplistic magic. Yeah, that's like the world. Anyways, I mean, it's actually pretty close to how higher magic works when I really think about it. I mean, I haven't personally evoked Mickey Mouse, but I could see some chaos magician out there doing that. But yeah, just sort of, you know, like, or like if the child's parents break up, you know, they'll think it's all their fault. Right. It's all about them.
Something that they did, right? They, some little action that they took that then meant that, yeah. Or like, oh, I just watched Home Alone. And, you know, the, like, I completely forgot about, like, the beginning scene where, like, you know, Kevin's, like, fighting with his parents and his family's all telling him what a jerk he is. And he says to his mom on the stairs, like, I hope I never see any of you ever again. And she's like, well, say that again, Kevin, and it might just happen. And he's like, I hope I never see any of you again. And then he wakes up the next morning and everyone's gone. And he's like, oh, my God, I did it. I made my family disappear. And, like, he has no idea that, like, they have gone for some other more reasonable, rational reason. He's just like, wow, I made my whole family disappear.
Yes.
Totally magical thinking.
Yes. So that sort of thing. And, let me get the graph up. Layla's helping me with the graph.
So I can the charts.
The charts. I just thought it was really interesting. So there's, you know, so like the rational level of consciousness is connected to modernism and postmodernism.
It's like scientific materialism. Mm-hmm. It's like we should be able to figure everything out and know everything with our rational minds that can like parse things out and see the boundaries between things and understand their interactions completely with our senses.
And so that's like modernism.
Yeah.
And then postmodernism is just like, you know, a fancy sophistry flourish on that. That's like, oh, wait, actually, we're so smart that we figured out that we can know nothing for sure, and it's all language games, and everything is relative, and nothing really means anything, and it's all just, you know, sort of like this, I feel like postmodernism is a bit of like a childish understanding of Buddhist emptiness or something like.
Right. It's like empty emptiness.
Yeah. Like nihilistic emptiness. Yeah. Meaningless. And then we have the wonderful integral phase, which is number 6. And Wilbur talks about how there's just like this huge transition between like the first 5 levels and the integral consciousness. Because what the integral consciousness is able to do is basically look at all of the preceding levels of consciousness and see what's really wonderful and valuable about them. Whereas he talks about how if you have people in a room and they're at those 5 sort of lower stages of consciousness, so let's say you have somebody who's at the like mythic stage.
Earlier labels.
Earlier. They're at the earlier stages of consciousness. And so somebody who's in the mythic mindset would be like, you know, a serious fundamentalist Christian who's like, there was a snake in the garden. That snake talked. It got Eve to eat the apple, you know. They're like very literal interpretations
of the myths.
And that, you know, somebody at that level of consciousness would be completely disgusted both by like a rational materialist scientist modernist person and also by a fancy pants postmodern person who is like, anything goes, nothing means anything.
Yeah. I mean, I can even see that like a strict mythic consciousness has a problem with like mythic, rational consciousness that's like, okay, good story. Like, what does the snake represent? Like, what does the apple mean? Like, was it a literal apple in a real garden? Or are these metaphors? And, like, the mythic person is like, yes, they were real. That is how it went down. And, like, they're so close to each other. Like, they're really... And I can see, like, the disgust happening on both sides of that, where, like, they really actually are interested in the same material, but because of the way that they're invested in the same material, they find each other's ideas about it to be, like, completely useless and annoying and...
Yeah, just offensive and stupid. And like, and you know, like dangerous.
Right.
You know, like, so like a fundamentalist would like hear, you know, some like metaphorical interpretation of the Bible as just like demonic crazy talk.
Right.
And, you know, and likewise, somebody with a more metaphoric understanding of myth would be like, you're a tragic peasant.
Like, right. You're like, this is the coloring book version. And you think that's real. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, there's no point in talking to you.
Right. Exactly. So what I thought was really interesting was that Ken Wilber was saying that, yeah, people at these five earlier stages of consciousness would really not enjoy each other's company at all. But if there was a sixth person in the room who was at an integral level of consciousness, they would probably, you know, that person wouldn't necessarily be their favorite person. They'd be like, yeah, they're okay. They're all right. Because the person at the integral level of consciousness basically would not be super attached to any of the positions and would, like, see the value in all of the positions, which, like, for example, like, the value in that sort of mythic fundamentalist understanding is... that's, like, the glue that's still holding, like, 30% of... the United States of America together in some sort of cultural underpinning that, you know, is rapidly being dissolved by all the postmodernists, but is like still the lichen.
Like the mythic consciousness actually like maintains the integrity of the myth. Like you can't remember how the fairy tale goes if you're like, well, it kind of means this, and like, this is what it's really about. And you're kind of like simultaneously analyzing the story as you're telling the story. Like, the story doesn't get preserved as well if it's being picked apart and figured out as it's being told. Like, somebody has to tell the story as it was told so that it can be thought about later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And, yeah. And also, I mean, like Ken Wilber was just giving the example of like places where there's still, you know, like since these stages of consciousness relate also to historical modes, like stages where the way of life is still very agrarian tend to have more of this like mythic consciousness going on, because that's like sustaining and supporting and giving meaning to their way of life and what they're doing. So like in the middle of Kansas, you know, people are still pretty into this way of seeing things and it supports them. Whereas, you know, in the fancy fast talking cities, like you better be a postmodern fancy, you better know slick. Your Derrida or else you're nothing. So, yeah. And it's so, okay. So the part that I like about that is that, well, first of all, I immediately thought of like the number six, you know, in the Kabbalah, that's Tifereth is the sixth center, the like balance point of beauty and symmetry and understanding. That's like receiving the information from all of the other Sephiroth and like, basically like being fueled by all of them,
right?
Like burning its star, its solar heart with all of this fuel from the other centers, and, you know, not trying to, yeah, just like not looking down on any of them, like being at the balance point amongst them.
Right.
And what I think is really exciting is, and maybe what was really interesting to me is, you know, my own consciousness, and I think definitely yours too, Layla, like I was at that postmodern sort of too cool for school stage for a long time. and was like into like the super uber liberal ideology, like whatever that was. And then like something happened to me, which actually corresponded very closely to various spiritual awakenings that I had.
Yeah.
Where like I was no longer able to like just jive with that postmodern uber liberal ideology anymore. And I do feel like my sympathy and appreciation for like conservative people, like who might even be fundamentalists, like grew largely. And likewise for, yeah, just my appreciation of everything expanded, like stuff that I had previously really looked down upon, even like materialist science, which I still get snooty about sometimes. I'm like, you know, gosh darn, like, sure is great having, medical help, of modern medical help when I need it, things like that, which come from materialist science. And yeah, just, I feel so it's, I guess why listening to Ken Wilber has been helpful to me is because I feel like not a whole lot of people talk about what it's like to have that shift in consciousness to like this sort of stage where we are. It's not popular. There's no like popular news stations that support this level of consciousness. There's no, I do think it is becoming more popular, and like Ken Wilber in this recording, this cosmic consciousness recording that I was listening to, I think he said it was like 2 or 3% of people he estimated were at the integral level of consciousness. I've heard other interviews with him. I don't know, maybe they were later in, I think they were later in his life, where he talked about, I don't even know, is he still alive? I hope so. Anyways, he talks about it being like an 8% integral consciousness. And he says that like 10% is the tipping point where the center of gravity in a culture starts to change to like, you know,
norms are set by the level of that new level of consciousness.
Right. And I just find that super hopeful and super relieving that we might be on the precipice of a switch to like many more people being at the integral level of consciousness, and like that being like the primary consciousness broadcast that's going out from the leaders of culture. Because I am so sick of like the really divisive, like, like really derogatory ways that like people speak about other groups of people.
Yeah, it's mean on both sides. It's mean on both, from every direction. There's a lot of meanness and fear and like calling people ignorant, you know, cause like, yeah. And I just see it everywhere. Like, and there are, you know, certain intellectual groups of people who like don't feel that they have any ignorance, but will say that like people who have a more like fundamentalist, you know, conservative view are super ignorant. But I think the joke is that those other people feel the exact same way about the like godless intellectuals. Like, you are also ignorant of something deep. And like, that's sort of the joke of the whole like game of those like warring levels of consciousness, is that like, they all think they're each other is stupid and they're not wrong.
Yeah. And that's so funny, because that, like, pointing out the ignorance, like, yeah, it's like there's a sort of ignoring or ignorance that's happening at each of those levels. And each of those levels likes to imagine that it is without ignorance, and then, yeah, be mad at the other levels. And so the idea that there is this level, integral consciousness, which is, I mean, I know that it's available because I've experienced it, and I get to have the great pleasure of having friends who experience it. That it's just like a more relaxed level of being. And it was just like really great, because I feel like Ken Wilber is like one of the only, I mean, it's like the only person talking about this and people who follow his work. It was just very validating, because he talks about how, at the integral level, there's a large like background static of fear that drops away, because a person it's like they're not fully enlightened. They're not like utterly at like the transpersonal level of identification, where they're like purely like in this like non-dual, like one with everything consciousness. But what it is it's like they are not as tightly identified with like the thoughts in their mind or their body or their culture that they grew up with. It's like a looser level of identification that is like just more, integrated, like able to appreciate and be in relationship with a full spectrum of reality instead of like being like super uptight and afraid of like death, for example, or like
good old death.
Yeah, which I think that is like the main, I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, like I didn't hear Wilbur talk about this particularly, but each of those earlier stages of consciousness have maybe like attitudes towards death that have like a very fearful element in them. Like if we think about it, like the fundamentalist religious, like you might go to hell, like you don't know, you didn't dot your I's and cross your T's just right, like you might be headed to eternal damnation. And obviously like the scientific materialist is like, well, you just disappear, you're in the void. And
not even in the void, just like there isn't anything else.
Yeah,
like,
nothing happens.
It's just over. Game over.
Yeah. And, I guess the postmodern attitude towards death is usually pretty similar to that, or just like a radical agnosticism, like we don't know, we can't know.
Right.
And then I would say like the integral relationship towards death is like, yeah, there's something happening and it's probably not, you don't have to be afraid of it. It's part of the whole experience.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fond of telling myself that I'm as dead now as I ever will be.
Mm-hmm.
That's my integrated life death awareness.
Well, my husband David says the same thing, and I really appreciate that. I try to inhabit it myself. Yeah. Go ahead. Say more.
Well, it's just, I mean, I think it's just, I mean, on a mythic level, this is sort of my like mythic interpretation. Like, this is the underworld. This is the world of death. Like, and they talk in like, you know, Christian mythology, how like, you know, when you die or, you know, when you accept Jesus or whenever you achieve enlightenment or whatever, and whatever words they're using, then you like enter the everlasting life. And like the everlasting real life is like undifferentiated, eternal, endless, total, perfect, everything, oneness, consciousness, which to me seems like where you go when you're not identified with your flesh body that you're walking around in the world of form in. So like they call that life, like that's a kind of life. So like this must be the opposite. Like this is the world of death. Like we literally eat other dead things to like sustain our bodies, which when whatever awareness that we have leaves, it becomes a dead thing. Like you poop every day to like remove the death from your body. Like we like live in a world of death. Like there's death, like totally interwoven into the matrix of whatever it is that we call life. So like, yes, this is the world of being dead. Like I'm dead now. This is what it's like to be dead. I'm cut off from the like source. I mean, you know, apparently because I have to care for my soon to be corpse. Like I am like cut off from like total identification with the undying eternal consciousness that is my life, that like infuses me and gives me life. So like I just see that they're like deeply, deeply interwoven. Like you can't, and I also have like a personal mythology that the reason that we don't just like live forever in like the unending bliss is because like being dead, being what we call alive, is like more exciting than like the total undifferentiatedness. Like it's kinky, it's fun, it's the dungeon. And I just see that there's like as much living is going on is dying. And like, as my personal mythology is that like, as soon as you leave your corporeal form, maybe you have a brief interlude of like downloading your life experience into the total whole. Although I'm sure that's happening in real time in the eternal etheric cloud as I'm speaking now, like it's all happening at once. Like maybe you have a brief moment of like outside the singularity consciousness, and then you just come right back in. You just like dive right back in into like a new experience in the material realm, and like there you are. And so you never really go anywhere. You just show right back up here, and you're just always here. You're just always here. So like, where is there? Where is the there of death? You're just here. We're all just here.
Yeah. So very, a very integrated, you know, nirvana is samsara, ketheris and malkuth way of seeing things. Precisely. And there's a reduction in fear in that.
Yeah.
Like a big reduction in fear. And I would say that like that is also something that I associate with my Tifereth experiences that I feel like have brought me into the integral state of consciousness. I guess I see those as synonymous now that I've listened to Ken Wilber talk about it a lot. Because it's not like I'm incapable of being afraid. Like I am afraid of, you know, people that I love, you know, getting sick or being injured or like leaving me alone, like leaving this world before I do. But I am not afraid to die myself. I'm like, wowie zowie.
What an adventure that will be.
Yeah. And that is hugely different.
I hope I keep my eyes open while that happens.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that is hugely different than like my general attitude towards existence. Like before that, whatever clicked in me, like I feel like I was a lot more of an anxious, uptight person. And I didn't even know that it was like fear of death that was doing that to me. It was just like this constant underlying kind of unconscious dread.
Well, I mean, I remember reading something that you wrote a while back, Carolyn, that was like, people think they're afraid of death, but what they're really afraid of is being alive. Mm. And that's like kind of why, I don't know, like, that's why I feel like... The words like living and dying to me, I'm like, which one means which? Like, which is which? Like, what is what here? Because, like, the process of being what we call alive is a process of, like, you know, transmutation and, like, becoming something different. Like, you know, I'm fond of thinking how, like, the little baby child that I was when I was three is as dead as I will ever be. Like, the not realness of that, like, three-year-old version of Layla is what death is. Mm. Like, it's just changing. And, like, you know, I used to be a science and math teacher. I am not anymore. I have moved on and am something completely different. And, like, the process of really being alive is allowing yourself to, like, change into something that you weren't before, such that the thing that you were, like, where is it? It's like not, yeah. It's no longer around. So that's as dead as dead. That's as not as not. And like, I think that that's like the fear of being alive that's synonymous with the fear of dying is just like, I have to be what I think I am, or I have to be what I am right now, like continuously and forever. And like to live well, I think it's important to be like, well, I'm just completely not at all what I was yesterday.
Yeah. You know what that's reminding me of is like, I was feeling some anxiety about aging recently, you know, just like looking in the mirror, seeing some more wrinkles than I used to see, a little less shiny skin, some more gray hairs. And, you know, there's part of me that's, like, super identified with, like, being this, like, glamorous young ingenue, this, like, little... And so I was like, oh, fascinating. And I was like, I really... there's, like, a part of me that is getting really curious about, like, just what is it like to be, like, a super jolly, chubby, middle-aged lady?
Right.
Like, what kind of fabulous caftans can I invest in? What sort of...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm
like holding yourself to the identity of like when you were 25.
Yes.
Being like, how do I more now move into the like perfected identity of myself at 45?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And a little like pro tip I want to share with everybody. I started experiencing this aging anxiety, I guess, in like my early 30s, you know, and what I did then that really helped me, I still like to do now, which is like not to think of myself as like a uglier, more faulty ingenue, but to think of myself as like, whoa, a really hot grandma. Like, if I were a grandma, I would be like, whoa, so hot.
The hottest grandma.
I mean, also, grandmas are just hot as they are, too. But anyways, just, like, thinking of myself as, like, yeah, I don't even know how to explain it. I'm just weird. But just noticing how attached I am to, like, yeah, my younger version of myself and, like, striving to trying to get positively interested in
who you will become when the younger version of you is dead and gone.
Mm-hmm. Because that sort of like frantic, like holding on that our culture encourages just seems very miserable to me. Like, it's, I don't really want to be fully committed to that.
It's literally suffering. It is suffering because it is attachment to the things of the world that will inevitably change. So you're not going to win.
Yeah,
you're not going to win.
Unwinnable fight. So thinking about that stuff. But yeah, anyway, so I just love that Ken Wilber was talking about the reduction in fear that comes with reaching an integral level of consciousness. And I also found that very hopeful because obviously what spurs a lot of the meanness of people to each other is fearfulness, is, you know, the super postmodern people feeling threatened by the fundamentalist Christian people and vice versa, and like them having these culture wars is basically what's going on. And I'm just like annoyed with it. I'm just like, oh, I don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, anyways, but it's going to continue to play out. But I also liked that Ken Wilber was talking about, you know, the way that one, how does one move? Like, how does one advance stages of consciousness?
Mm.
And he was talking about, you know, you want to continue advancing your moral development, your compassionate development, which I think our friend Dr. Robert talks about really in a beautiful way, where he talks about like, and I believe that Dr. Robert was informed and inspired by the Ken Wilber integral model, but like, yeah, like knowing your self position and your first person, like knowing yourself, and that also being able to empathically, imaginatively occupy like a second person position, and empathize with people, and also being able to occupy sort of like a third person, or, you know, zoomed out, more objective-y type
outside position. Watcher.
Yeah. And being, and having fluency and like moving amongst those and communicating from all of those is like Dr. Robert's definition of emotional health, which I think is really brilliant. Ken Wilber, I didn't hear him say that specifically, but I think that's a great insight from Dr. Robert. So like you advance by like developing in that like moral way, and like going from having just like, I think one of the main examples he was giving was like ethnocentric concern, or, you know, just concern for like my family, people who are like me, to, you know, moral, compassionate concern for like all human beings, all sentient beings, the whole earth. And that sort of like expanded identification of like, well, we're all one big family, so I can care as much about all humanity's welfare as I do about my ethnicity or family's welfare. Which of course is a huge point, a huge leap that lots of people have yet to make. And so doing that, and then doing, practicing inhabiting the different states of consciousness. So, you know, he was really emphasizing meditation as a primary tool of like basically the art of, and I like how I really love how he simplifies it and explains the art of meditation is like the practice of, basically turning more like things that you usually take to be your subjectivity, like your thoughts, your feelings, your motivations, your desires, and, you know, stepping back from those and perceiving those more as just spontaneously objects. Occurring objects. And really your subjectivity is just like the vast spaciousness in which they are arising, and which is the, that's the essence of the meditation practice that I do. And I just really love how neatly he summarized that. It's like, you know, you withdraw your subjective identification, withdraw, 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 to the point that like suddenly you're subjectively identified with the whole dance of reality, which is like the Solvay and the Coagula of non-dual realization. And and I have, again, I found that to be very true. Like, the thing that took me into deeper integral awareness was doing a lot of that kind of meditation, in addition to magical practice, which, like, made my mind more capable of that kind of meditation.
Totally. Yes.
So I can, I'm just endorsing that. Ken Wilber is right, folks. more you disidentify from your petty thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, the thoughts thing is, like, so interesting because it's so easy to be just, like, completely hypnotized by the, like, contents of the mind. And I just, like, it's just wonderful to be reminded, like, you are not that. Like, the stuff will fly across the screen. Like, things will be thought. Thoughts will be thought no matter what you do. Like, they will happen.
Yeah, but so like, how could they be you? Like, if you have no, you can't stop them, like, they're not you. I love that. I love that, you know, yeah, speaking of the hypnosis, like, Wayne Lickerman also talks about it really eloquently. He talks about, he calls it the divine hypnosis. Mm. And that, like, basically when we're 2 years old, we all fall into, like, this divine hypnosis of, like, identifying with our, as the authors of our thoughts and feelings and desires and intentions. And that basically, yeah, the whole art of waking up is like, with, he calls it, instead of, you know, how like Eckhart Tolle and people talk about like the ego, I think he has a better term for it. He calls it the false sense of authorship, or the FSA, because it's not really having an ego that's a problem. Like, you can be completely awakened and still, like, you know, have... like
a self,
distinguish yourself from the environment,
right?
Like,
yeah, you know, yeah, like, yeah.
No, and but it's the constant claim of like, I am authoring this is important because it is me and I am the author of it, and it's like this, I mean, it's just pure insanity. Like, it's not true on any level when you really think about it, and yet the hypnotic illusion of it is so persistent. And, I mean, it's also interesting, Wayne Lickerman talks a lot about how, like, you have absolutely no power over whether or not you ever wake up from it or not. Like, some people wake up from it spontaneously. Some people, there's, like, years of meditation that precedes them waking up from it. But you can't say, like, you know, do this amount of meditation and you will definitely wake up from it, because that's never...
Well, yeah, because, I mean, there's, like, it's extremely common to, like, have the, like... the false sense of authorship completely take ownership and control of the desire to get out of the false sense of authorship. And it's just like that you're not, no.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I like notice a lot in my meditation these days is like, I'll be meditating and I'll feel like the desire or like the frustration of like not already being fully like melted into the release of cosmic consciousness. And it'll seem like that desire or frustration is like, you know, the motivation of the meditation. And it's also just like the thing that is keeping me from melting.
Right.
Like, it is like my identification. It seems like me. It seems like my frustration or my desire. And... it's just my suffering. But yeah, it's so fascinating. So so it's like, I guess what Ken Wilber is saying is, well, I mean, he doesn't take the same stance as Wayne Lickerman, I don't think. I feel like Ken Wilber might say you can definitely wake up with the right amount of meditation. But, you know, just that even, you know, just practicing that disidentification, like even if you're not able to like utterly and totally wake up from the hypnosis, just like creating some intervals of lucidity within it is really helpful for, yeah, being able to at least live at that integral level of consciousness, if not at the super self-realized transpersonal level. And I would say that's definitely been true in my experience.
Yeah. I think another thing that like, in addition to like the inner disidentification is like an outer practice can really just be one of like respecting other people's ways of looking at things. Mm-hmm. It's like it like being culturally fluid or fluent or like accept, like tolerant, like specifically like asking yourself and like noticing when you're just being like intolerant and bigoted not about like the color of somebody's skin or how they dress or their language or their like social customs, but like where you're being bigoted about how they see the world and just being like, you are less than me. Your opinion is less important. And like catching oneself on that.
Absolutely. And what's really funny is like in listening to Ken Wilber about this, I realized I was like, oh, like I, since I was a really intense postmodernist, super liberal for so long, like, and then I completely lost all sympathy for them and their weird authoritarianness during the pandemic. Like, I need to fight the good fight of like being able to like love and appreciate liberals again. Like, really, it left me for a while there.
Yeah. Bigotry is...
I've been super bigoted.
Yeah. I feel like bigotry is not the way.
No, it's not
the way the truth and the light.
There's wonderful things about authoritarian liberals. And their great zeal to protect everybody from COVID.
I mean, you can just see that, like, it's fear. Like, you can just see that, like, it's a strategy for managing fear. And, like... that's just what people do. Like, people just have different strategies for managing fear. Mm-hmm. That's what they're up to. And, like, no one particular way is really better or cooler or more right than any other way, because it's all just trying to deal with fear.
Exactly. But I think I need to remember the positive things about them to appreciate more.
Well, like, they're not, like... calling for, you know, they're not like pulling some kind of like Taliban style, like, you know, super lockdown of like gender and social roles.
Exactly. They always supported me in my advanced whatever transcending of traditional gender roles, and they always supported me in my weird paganism and magic.
Yeah.
Lots of great things about liberals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's a light in the shadow of everything, Carolyn. It's just, it's inevitable. It's just the way that it is.
I know. But anyways, I'm saying it's funny that's just the challenge for me.
For you now right? Because you were so there. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I was raised in like a super scientific materialist home. And sometimes, like, I have to be, like, when I hear people, like, really defending the, like, materialist, like, nihilistic, agnostic, atheist reality, I also have to be, like, wow, all right, you are, like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry that it's, like, hard for you to, like, imagine anything other than, like, inert matter. Like, it seems so difficult for you. Like, that seems sad. Like, I'm sorry, you know? I'm sorry. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, so, so basically we just wanted to share our hope and excitement with all of you that, like, our culture really is probably on the precipice of, like, really, like, you know, there's our wonderful listeners out there who are, I do believe, with us at this, like, integral blossoming into transpersonal stage of consciousness, and that this blossoming is going to continue to happen, that it's really pretty inevitable, and hopefully it happens sooner rather than later, because I feel like we need a lot more love and appreciation for each other and less fear. And that is what the promise of this evolution of consciousness gives us.
Indeed.
So thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everyone.
Yeah.
We don't talk until then.
Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Cool. Oh.